Is one of the world's biggest foreign currency markets rigged?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Here from APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Britain's equivalent of Treasury Secretary later today will push to lower the boom on currency traders who may have been manipulating the market for dollars, pounds, euros, and more. The concern is that if investors think the system's rigged, they will take their currency trading elsewhere. The BBC's finance correspondent Andy Verity is following this from London. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So we know that traders can, they should not, but can manipulate currency markets. Remind us of the issue here. There's a question that this may be going on in London, or did go on in London.
Well, that's right. Now, on the foreign currency markets, every day at 4 p.m, there's what's known as the 4 p.m. close. And that's the crucial time at which the prices are fixed. If you share information ahead of that time, there is the potential in the 60 seconds before 4 o'clock to make some money before your clients do. It's what's known as front running, and you can make a turn.
What do you think, Andy? Was this practice always seen as clearly wrong by the people involved?
Well, this is the really interesting thing, is that I think the traders would say the authorities knew. So that makes it much harder for the authorities now to press for the full force of the law to be brought down on anybody involved in currency manipulation if it turns out that it's confirmed that the authorities knew about it.
But what is Britain's finance minister, George Osborne, proposing to do now?
We don't know exactly what he's going to propose until he gives his speech this afternoon. However, we've been given hints that the regulation that they're extending for LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate, which, as you know, has already been the subject of a scandal, that regulation will be extended to other benchmarks. The thing is, though, manipulating prices on the basis of inside information may well be prosecutable as market abuse already. So you've got to ask, what difference is it going to make if they introduce a new criminal offence?
BBC finance correspondent Andy Verity in London, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Twitter has a new partnership with the Weather Channel to target ads based on where its users live and what the weather's doing there, cool or cloying. Reporter Tracy Samuelson checks it out.
One of the scariest lines a bad guy in a movie can say is, "I know where you live." But these days, thanks to location data, online advertisers almost always know where you are. And now, Twitter and the Weather Channel want to tell them if you're shivering or sweating.
60 degrees may be cold in Miami, which means that you want, you know, hot coffee.
Kurt Hecht is the chief revenue officer at the Weather Channel.
And 60 degrees in Chicago means I'm getting an iced coffee, right?
There's a strong correlation between weather and consumption, says Oded Netzer, a professor at Columbia Business School. So knowing what the weather's like is really useful for advertisers.
So, for example, there is some evidence that company may be able to charge a little bit higher prices during warm weather conditions. Whether this will be ethical to do and how consumers will react to that if companies do that, that's a whole different story.
So an ad for an umbrella right before it's supposed to rain, that might be helpful. Jacking up the price of air conditioners on a really hot day, not so much. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is up not quite a 10%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up slightly. Marketplace Morning Report is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. A gift from you, yes, you if you can, in any amount, helps the Marketplace crew keep telling the money stories behind the news of the day. Help us end the budget year in a strong position by making a gift at marketplace.org by June 30th, if you could. From time to time, we bring in art critic Blake Gopnik to look at the intersection of art and commerce. He is critic at large for artinfo.com. Today, it is the case of a 17th century painting that a few months ago was just a canvas of a guy who looks like Rembrandt. But now the experts are thinking it really is Rembrandt by Rembrandt himself. Morning, Blake.
Great to be back.
All right, so there's this canvas. It apparently depicts Rembrandt himself, probably from 1635. Was it what, in a storage room or something?
It was in a storage room because guess what? They didn't think it was by Rembrandt. Now that they think it's by Rembrandt, it's worth, they say, $50 million, and it would have been worth something like 1/125th of that 2 weeks ago before they declared it by Rembrandt. Same painting, but now it's by Rembrandt and it's a great object.
That is quite a journey for this canvas in terms of how it is being perceived. You find that jarring.
Yeah, I'm spitting mad about it. After all, this is exactly the same work of art. If it's a masterwork now, it was a masterwork weeks ago before they declared it by Rembrandt. They got rid of a bunch of old yellow varnish, and now they can see that they like it. And if they like it, it's got to be by Rembrandt. This whole business about it being proven by science to be a Rembrandt, that's just bogus.
But it's your sense that ultimately it's a kind of consensus thing. If enough people gravitate toward, it's a little bit like a jury. Juries don't always determine truth. They just sort of come together to agree.
Yeah, but the difference is a jury's deciding something important. Why do we care that this thing is a Rembrandt? Or rather, why do we care it's got a Rembrandt name attached to it? That's the weirdest thing about this whole story. And of course, it's mostly about money.
But this is the thing about the art world. It makes a huge difference to people to know whether or not something was a Picasso or whether it was a knockoff on the street. I mean, that's at the center of what it is to own art.
And you know who got that started? Rembrandt himself. He was the great brand maker. He turned himself into a brand. The way a Ralph Lauren counts as Ralph Lauren, even if, guess what, Mr. Lauren never actually touched the thing. So Rembrandt created self-portraits that said, hey, there's this great artist called Rembrandt who makes paintings. And you know what? Those self-portraits could be by anyone, could be by a pupil, and they still counted as being Rembrandt's. They had the mark of his brand.
Critic Blake Gopnik is working on a biography of Andy Warhol for HarperCollins. Blake, thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here.
And visionary inventor Nikola Tesla wanted to put up a giant mushroom-shaped antenna out on New York's Long Island and broadcast electricity to homes. Well, starting today, Starbucks will start using a similar principle to let customers charge their phones wirelessly for free. Just set the phone down on a special mat while sipping your coffee. Your phone has to be compatible, and most are not yet. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Say you have a ticket to an NBA playoff game, but you can't make it. What to do when selling is not an option?
If you can't go, you can offer to trade. If that is rejected, it goes to the next person automatically.
Easier said than done, I think. I'm Kai Rizdahl, NBA tickets and sharing. Next time on Marketplace from APM.